My decision was based on I needed a mental reminder of that I can do anything on this planet.
Nice.
And I picked something that I like. Who doesn't like meat? It's tasty, it's nice. So I decided to go vegetarian. It's always worked out as a mental reminder that if you pick something that you like and you're not able to do it, that's that discipline that you can carry on in other places.
The end of the world as we knew it didn't happen on a single day. It was more like a series of dates that all pointed to the fact that everything was shifting. The shift had already been happening, but COVID-19 let us know that nothing was safe. Nothing was sacred. And the new rules didn't care about anything we held dear. As the world rapidly changed, we had to change along with it. This is the first in a series of conversations we had with five key Africans who gave us insight into how they experienced this change.
How did I not? Because I was like, why are the faces so oily, you know? Then I realized I was pointing the lights directly. So back then I didn't know how to light properly, like how to soft light images and things like that.
Are we recording or?
Yeah, we are recording, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
so you guys are doing an intro, so I don't know how it works.
No, the intros generally happen 30 minutes into the podcast. 30 minutes in.
We're hanging out with our friend, director Kenny Mumba. Chilu, how did you meet Kenny?
Like most people in this day and age, we meet online. And I think that's how Kenny and I met. And shortly after meeting him, we were already collaborating on various projects. Me doing voiceover for his commercials, him shooting the music video for Njota, which was a collaboration between you and I back in 2012, 2013. And so it's been work and collaboration almost from the get-go. And what I respect most about Kenny is his focus and single-mindedness when it comes to pursuing his goals. Many of the aspects of Kenny's reality today are things that he had spoken about years ago, and they've just come to fruition based on his drive, perseverance, and hard work towards reaching those goals. He's, I suppose, a lot younger than us, but seeing him come into his own and sometimes hearing him speak and sounding like a wise old man is refreshing.
What's your fondest memory of Kenny?
Well, I suppose each time I see him directing, he gets so involved and he gets so much into the zone that sometimes he forgets to eat. And watching his energy being depleted because of the fact that he hasn't given himself a break to take a bite of lettuce or whatever. Remember, he's vegetarian. And hearing a concerned person on set telling him, Kenny, you need to eat something. That's what comes to mind. I keep seeing people online of late calling him one of the greatest directors or filmmakers in Africa. And having seen the journey from early on, one has to salute Mr. Kenny Mumba.
I've known you guys for years, so excited to chat.
We come a long way. So maybe for starters, man, like you've 2020, weird year for all of us. It was one of those years, I think, where the true sense of adapt or die came to fruition, because some guys didn't make it out of 2020 literally, you know, because of the pandemic and people's lives being taken away. But also from a business perspective, it was like tough for guys to adapt and re-engineer their skills to this new thing. But then with that said, just based on your Instagram, for instance, you were busy. You know what I mean? Like you managed to wiggle out of it. What was the year like for you, man? Give us an overview of last year.
Actually, just before the COVID hit, I had jobs lined up. So there were jobs that were already booked, but everything got canceled because lockdown started. My last job, I was in Uganda and I was traveling back to Zambia. That's when we knew about, I mean, it was a distant thing. But then you hear, I think it hit first in South Africa or Kenya. And then by the time I got back to Zambia, there was a lockdown in Kenya. And then there's a lockdown in South Africa. It still felt distant until we experienced the same where there's no flights anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I got used to flying to places to do business because 80% of the work now is outside Zambia. It's either East, West Africa or down here in Southern Africa. So that was a bit hectic because I didn't know what to do, but experience came through because back then we were running studio that does animation. So the only alternative was to interact using animation. So a lot of animation jobs started coming through. I pitched on a couple of things. We started being innovative in terms of you can still give a narrative out there without physical contact, without being on location itself and doing the work. It opened the door because where it looked like there was no opportunity, I saw the opportunity that animation is the only way to go because they still want to communicate. You still want to sell product regardless of a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And that's the path that opened up a lot. But right after that, everything came back up.
I think it's lucky that, Kenny, you are in the creative industry space because you are able then, because of COVID, to shift to a more animation-based space. Would you then call yourself, because I was thinking about it when Chilo was introducing you and he was adding filmmaker and stuff there, and I was thinking, I consider you a storyteller more than anything.
You're probably right, yeah.
When all is said and
yeah.
done,
yeah.
you're a storyteller, you know? I mean, you rapped before.
I tried to keep that life hidden, but not.
Well, it's out now. Exposed.
Cats out the bag. Cats, you rapped before, and it's available online. Those who are interested in seeing the homie rap, it's there. We're all out there. Trust me, our kids will be laughing at us. In fact, they're laughing right now. You rapped, you directed behind the camera, you presented in front of a camera.
And yes, you have history.
Dog, I mean, you're my boy, right? I mean, it's my job to know what my boy's up to, you know? So clearly, you're not just the one thing. You are literally just about telling stories, and you really seem to be good at telling them visually. That's kind of your, I think that's your wheelhouse. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think I've done different things. As a creative, you bounce off different things. I think that's what actually makes who you are. Yeah. So it's like a cocktail of all these different ingredients. And me producing a show and trying to drive a narrative, getting a presenter and me presenting it myself, searching for the story itself and then shooting it, editing it, grading it, all those different things, you kind of start to understand what you're looking for, what your standard is.
Yeah.
And when you find that path, you kind of stick to what you want to do. I was a cinematographer who used to film at some point, but then it boiled down to I want to direct because that way what a director does is you're able to oversee the overview of what the narrative is that you're pushing. So if you're too deep into it, you will not see what the overview is. So as much as you have a DOP who's on set who will push the narrative with you, but when it goes into post-production, because you spend more time in there, you can take things out, put things back in, then you're also pushing things like performance. Are your actors giving you what you're looking for? So hence I decided to focus and be a director, shoot commercials, but the end goal is make movies. That's the end goal.
As a creative in the music industry, I had to wear many different hats at different points in my career. While inconveniencing at times, the skills you eventually acquired gave you the ability to see the game from many different angles, a context that I would have otherwise never gotten if I had certain structures in place. Chilu, how do you feel about having to wear many different hats?
That's an interesting one, but kind of like you, I've also had to wear many hats in my career. But I have to say, with some of them, I've never reached the stage where either A, I trust myself enough to call myself an expert, or B, have the desire to become one. That's an honest assessment, I think. And that's simply because I recognize that there are guys out there who are so superior in their skill that if I want to put out a world-class offering, I'm better off paying them to give the work that gloss. The whole idea of wearing many hats, though, reminds me of a story from a few years ago, which starts with me eavesdropping on a conversation between two significant African filmmakers, Fabian Lojede, who we once hosted on Key Africans Unlocked, and Adze Uga. So we happened to be in the same recording studio in Johannesburg one day, and Adze was in the middle of an amusing conversation with Fabian that appeared to be a lighthearted one full of laughter. Realizing that I was third wheeling, Adze roped me in. He kind of altered his glance to face me and said, "Chilu, can you imagine these guys brought in a top director from New York to direct a series in Nigeria, and the guy failed to deliver?" And then he looked back at Fabian and they carried on. The conversation was loud, but it was a lighthearted exchange. And as Adze was laughing at an amusing aspect related to that story of the director from NYC who bombed in Lagos, Fabian looked at me and said, "You see, the difference between working in film in places like the US is that the director in markets like that has a specific job. And that job isn't to dictate the fine details of what happens with the lighting or the sound or other aspects on set. Whereas most times on set in certain parts of Africa, the director has to know and almost be an expert in all functions and all aspects of a production." And I thought that was quite profound regarding wearing many hats and the success or failure thereof.
So I wouldn't really speak, of course, for every director, but I think the ones that stand out and that are strong in the industry is you need to know a little bit of everything. So like, for example, you get on a set and your wardrobe department gives you clothes they believe work for either the narrative or the image you're trying to achieve. So only you'll be able to know whether it works. So someone can sell you an idea, but you have to also know what you're pushing for. So those ingredients help. Even when you're listening to audio, when you hear it in your earphones, you know something is wrong. That's how you quality control. From even a performance, everyone else on set can clap for someone who's performed, but you'll be able to see through it and be like, that doesn't feel real. You know what I mean? and I think that's been our biggest struggle as Africans. Like I would say now we have the resources to create content. But I think where we lack is some of the performance is not there yet. There's a lot of talented people, but I think it's putting all the talented people in one room. Sometimes you find a project has 1, 4, 5 talented people, but then everyone else is watered down. Then that way we can deliver a stellar product to the world. So I think it's getting the right minds that think the same way, understand that this is the bar we're all trying to achieve. Then that way it becomes easy to bring everyone together and create. So the thing about creativity is it's not a one-man show. It's almost impossible. Of course, you need a leader in any process, someone who has the vision, someone who understands where something needs to be achieved. Yeah.
So from your perspective as the director and sort of the custodian of the vision, would you say that you have a general narrative that you hold true as Kenny? Yeah. Of how you generally see things that has become almost a signature look, feel, style, storytelling angle? Or do you shift and change those based on the project? Do you change those based on the client or the brief? Or, you know, because I mean, take Tarantino, for example. Yeah. Tarantino has a signature Tarantino vibe,
yeah. Yeah.
Right? And his storytelling is pretty much Tarantino-esque. Would you say you have something similar for you?
Yeah, it took a while, but I finally found it.
Nice.
So no matter what brief you get from a client, because either it's an agency or a client, they have a narrative of how they want you to deliver something. Mm-hmm. But your experience, your exposure, where you've been, you know, what food you ate, what culture you experienced determines how you tell the story. So what I do is get the same narrative and then own it. And say, look, this is my experience. This is my understanding. So I go back and give my interpretation of how the story needs to be told. Eventually, I found out my style was more, Africa was always portrayed in this gloomy way, this sepia type of grading in terms of how things look. But when you step out of the door, everything looks colorful. You know what I mean? Yeah. So why is someone selling a narrative of this is who you are when you know who you are? So I kind of fused in a gritty style, but with something that's more vibrant in terms of how it looks. So it could be gritty, but it looks colorful. It looks beautiful. So whether it's a Vogue commercial playing, they can play my commercial here in Africa and still match them and see that this is its own textures, its own style, but at the same standard in terms of global standards themselves. Yeah.
That's super important, yeah. Bro. For example, when we used to make music and we started out, the US was the standard, right? Yeah. It's hip-hop music, right? So we all grew up bumping that hip-hop music, you know, West Coast, New York hip-hop, you know, we're about that life. So everything we made was trying to match up to that and never could, man. It never really got to that standard of New York, Cali, you know, the South. It always sounded like a bastardized version, a B-grade version, almost like a weak carbon copy, right? But when Kenny and them do their thing today in terms of filmmaking, the ads they create, it's not even like they're on par, yeah? It's like they offer something very different and in some cases far superior.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that that comes from getting to a point where you've got the right people around you, you share the vision, you keep to the vision, and then you try and make the vision come alive. But more importantly, you acknowledge that this is the standard which we can't go below. Mm. And that standard is the global standard. And then you start to create something above that standard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that you can have that Vogue video play. Yeah. But when they play the Africa version of what Kenny does, not only is it on par, but it offers something different.
Yeah.
And in some cases, something better, right? And that's what is exciting for me about where film, ads, you know, visuals are going in Africa. I feel like there's a clear difference between how we're doing it and how the rest of the world are doing it. Even though there is par excellence in terms of like grading quality and shooting, like I think we've got the same tech now.
And yeah, we do.
We've got the same understanding of how to use the tech. So now we're starting to define ourselves better using those tools.
I think now we're in a place where the tools are there. It's just the narrative that we need to fight for. Because if someone's giving a lot of money to create something, they control the narrative. So I believe whether you're using a phone, you're using a cheaper camera, a high-end camera, you still have the ability to create something that is innovative enough to be global standard. And I think Africa right now is, I think we're the next billionaires. Mm. Why I say that is if you look at content that's been created in the Western world, is it's repetitive. It's something you've seen before. It's a family or someone who was taken away, then you ask us, you're fighting for them.
I've got a specific set of skills.
Yeah. Not to take away anything from some of that content, but what I'm trying to get at is there's a lot of content that's out there is repetitive. When I switch on this streaming platforms, I watch something, I'm like, I've seen this before, it's just in a different body. Mm-hmm. So it's always, you know, like this spinning thing that keeps coming back.
Yeah.
It's like in a circle. But whereas African content, some of our stories haven't been told, and a lot of them. So what we are is literally a gold mine that's not been mined. So there's no African out there who can give an excuse that you can't create a narrative powerful enough. So it's not just about having the great lighting, the great camera. What people fall in love with is storytelling. And our background is storytelling. We started from a fire with your grandmother, grandfather. Then now, the only difference is there's a camera involved. I feel like we have those stories and we should go ahead and tell those stories, whether there's budget, whether there's no budget. I think you go ahead and do something. The world would definitely recognize something that is powerful. A good example is people are on TikTok today. The views are going higher because it's organic. It's the same way when you create your own content, whether it's film, whether it's a music video. A good example is people like Burna Boy who are huge now because he stuck to his narrative. If you listen to the how the music is textured, it's African. You know, I mean, you can't take that away from who we are. So I believe as Africans is own the narrative. Don't try and be someone else. Be yourself because there's no one like you. So what the world is looking for, they're not looking for a copy of something else. They're only looking for something that doesn't exist, something that they haven't seen before. And we qualify as people who haven't been seen before. We've always been the background, always had a narrative written for us. Mm-hmm. So I believe now is the time to own the narrative in whatever way. Yeah.
Do you think there's, in the same way that you guys have just been speaking about tech particularly, I noticed recently that if you, for example, want to get something onto Netflix, the minimum standards in terms of the tech that you can use, like you cannot use, you know, the cameras that I own, like a Sony A6500, even though it shoots good stuff, but there's like a minimum requirement. I think it's a Red camera and Blackmagic ABCD and so on. So what are your thoughts on, because I mean, the real stuff that they are looking for as minimum standard is costly even to hire. So does that cause like a restrictive situation if you want to get on platforms like that?
So actually, I had a misconception that platforms like Netflix are looking for content that is shot on these high-end cameras. But when I actually went scroll down that list and I found out most of those cameras that are there are actually cameras that say in Zambia, Kenya, Nigeria, which is a big market here in South Africa, they actually have that equipment. It's the same equipment that they shoot these telenovelas. So they kind of created this range where they're really looking for 4K footage that looks amazing because of the platform. And that's where I think different creatives are slacking, because there's an opportunity there. Like, don't wait for that big thing. Grab what you have and create the most powerful narrative you can. So it's not where you're from. It's not what equipment you have. And sometimes, even if you don't meet the standards, a narrative is a narrative. They'll buy your narrative because it's strong enough. Because I've gone through some of the platforms where they're saying that the standard is 4K, but then look at some of the footage is 2K. I know that this was shot on a 2K format.
Yeah.
But why they got it is because the narrative is strong. It's just, of course, they advise that platform so that the mix and matching stuff works better for them. But if you do not have, just go ahead and do it. Mm. Yeah.
And that's what we do in Africa. That's what we're really good at.
Yeah.
Even if the platform doesn't allow for it, we will find a way to put it on that platform.
Yeah.
And if that platform is not the one for it,
YouTube,
find other platforms, right? One thing I just wanted to throw in there real quick before I jump into a different segue is, on Netflix, have you watched any Korean films?
Yes.
They're amazing, bro.
Yeah,
I love really the storytelling of the Koreans. They shot beautifully. The stories are told well. And they have a different subculture there. And culture and subculture. So the nuances of love, for example, are very different. The nuances of respect are different. Mm-hmm. How they treat each other across gender, how a man will treat a woman are different. You know, how an older person will treat a younger person are different. When I say different, I mean different to the Western portrayal of these stories, you know, because these stories that we are used to watching, that we've been watching all along, through a Western lens viewed way of telling these stories. Now, you can imagine if Africa decides to do that, same as how the Koreans do theirs, where we leverage our culture, how we treat our elders, how we treat men and women, the dynamic between, you know, the old and the young, the rich and the poor, you know, and different social dynamics, different language dynamics. That in itself is a nice goldmine of uniqueness and difference that will make you stand out, you know, in terms of storytelling.
While the art of storytelling continues to unfold and evolve rapidly in front of our eyes, it's become increasingly apparent that it is the oldest language in the world. And it's the oldest because it is the most resilient. It is not in threat of the change. Everything around it, however, is up for grabs.
I wanted to segue to something you said earlier on, Kenny, where you said your team around you will play a big part, but you also said the food you eat will play a big part. Nah, last time I checked, you know that song. Last time that I checked, you were a vegetarian, right?
Kenny's never had beef with anyone.
Yeah, we go with the dad jokes. There we go with the dad jokes.
Apologies.
So you never had beef with anyone, but you also didn't have beef on the plate, right? Are you still not eating meat? And what's up with that? What's your thinking behind that?
It's since 1996. I'm not good with the math, but it's 20-something years.
Wow.
My decision was based on, I needed a mental reminder of that I can do anything on this planet. I picked something that I like. Who doesn't like meat? It's tasty. It's nice. So I decided that that's something I'll not have as part of my meals. So I decided to go vegetarian. And it's always worked out as a mental reminder that if you pick something that you like and you're not able to do it, that's that discipline that you can carry on in other places.
Wow, yeah. That's incredible.
Incredible. Yeah. Do you have something similar, Chilu, that you've...
No, man. None that I can think of. As so you
never,
can see,
you've never had to
to let sacrifice. Go of something. Well,
even for like Lent, you're not Catholic though, are you?
No, I used to be, but I used to smoke though. So,
oh, really?
So that's different in terms of, you know, when I started, it was part of being cool and whatnot, and then I couldn't stop smoking, so I was kind of, you know, addicted to smoking for a long time, and that was difficult to let go. But I haven't smoked since 97 98.
That's impressive.
And that used to be the marker, like, you know, you overcame that, you know, so that's you can overcome a lot of things,
and therefore there's nothing you can't do.
Yeah.
I think
with you, nothing comes to mind.
No, well, I do have a couple of things, but I just want to say with your not smoking. Smoking is a bad thing.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I don't know if eating meat is a bad thing. I guess it depends on what you call bad. But it's different when you quit something that's bad for you.
Yeah.
But when you quit something that
that is inconsequential, right, in terms
like,
of
like me, that's like almost like now you really are sacrificing something just to build character, you know? Yeah. From a personal perspective, what have I sacrificed? Quite a few things. I mean, for example, I lived in the most comfort zone place where I grew up in Harare. It was almost like a cushy place, just the lap of luxury. Everything was provided for you, you know? But I knew that I had to leave and chart my own journey, my own path, even in a foreign country with no family around me. Best decision I ever made in my life, 2000, where I decided I'm going to leave everything I know, everyone I know and love and care for, and start this new world with only two people that I knew around me that I loved and cared for, my best friends at the time. And yeah, it has been, for me, a source of strength to remind me that, dude, if you could do that, there's really nothing on the planet you can't do. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's one. Just in terms of meat, bro, and just what it does when you eat meat as a creative. And now I'm just going to show you my own viewpoint. You don't have to agree. You know, from one creative to another. I think there's something wrong with us eating meat, man. I think it's not right. You know, I think animals are sentient, conscious beings, bro. And for that reason, we shouldn't be eating them. I tried to go vegan some years ago. Chilu knows because it was part of that journey.
Tried to.
It lasted about 2.5 weeks, but I felt better, you know? I felt that at least I was trying to do something. But like you said, Kenny, it's tasty, that thing, man.
It is. I see it with my daughter when she closes her eyes.
Oh man. When she's savoring the flavors in the mouth. Yes.
I close my licking eyes her too. Fingers.
Yo, when I bite into that bacon, I close my eyes, man.
There's a comedian who said, and he summarized it. He says, I kind of have a problem with the fact that for me, in order for me to live, something has to die. When he was talking about meat, I was like, oh, that's deep.
Isn't that crazy?
Okay, for me, it's like, I don't mind, you know.
Let the animals die.
That's the Zambian in you. Trust and believe. All my Zambian family have no problem with like killing animals for food.
Like how I grew up around my parents is you'd see them cut a chicken from the throat. You know, so first time I saw it was dramatic. But, you know, next time they're like, you do it.
Did you?
Yeah.
I think we all have killed a chicken. Have you killed a chicken, Chilu?
No, I failed. And there's if you check out my book, I actually describe how I failed. It's like a nice one pager.
Yeah, Finding My Voice. Go check it out.
Plug. Any opportunity to plug.
I had to kill a chicken as well. How can you be Zambian and not have killed a chicken? That makes just
squeamish.
No sense, bro.
I was so squeamish, man.
Others have killed goats, cows.
I know. I mean, at our family farm in Makeni in Lusaka, there were pigs. And, you know, they'd slaughter them. And I remember having a chat with my brother. You know my brother, Mumba.
Yes, yeah.
And I was saying, how do you feel, killing pigs? And he's like, no, I mean, I could kill one here, look at it while I get pork onto my plate. Like, he's not affected. I'm like, whoa, that's strong. I don't know. I'm squeamish, you know.
Well, look, you look healthy. You look always younger when I see you. I think it's because you don't eat meat, fam. That and that you're a creative to the core. Speaking of your daughter, where we were talking about how she loves meat, what has it been like for you being a pops, man, being a dad? How has it changed you ever since your daughter came into the world?
When you're just a guy, you're going through life with purpose only for yourself, only for what you want out of this world, and you do anything to get it. But knowing that you are responsible for someone else and responsible for their dreams as well becomes selfless. So you're not only thinking about yourself when you make decisions, you think about the bigger picture. Like I have a wife now, so I think about my wife, I think about my daughter and how that impacts them. I mean, you don't always get it right. The plan is to always try hard and achieve that. But again, when you go in for a fight, why I call it a fight is when you're pitching for work. You're not pitching alone. There's other people pitching for work. I think your punches are harder because they're with purpose and you win the pitch and next thing you're on set. So I think it's a huge motivation to be a creative in itself. It's a huge motivation to want more. Because you don't only want it for yourself, you also want it for your team.
That's so dope.
That's deep, man.
Like team.
Yeah. Like as a dad, it's funny you say team. So my family, we've got a WhatsApp group. And the WhatsApp group, I think, was called Lemba Fam. So it's me, my wife, and my two kids. And then at some point realized that the younger one, Liseli, was not an administrator. Like a three administrator. So she's like causing a ruckus about that. So I make her administrator. Next thing, I'm trying to find something in the family group. And I typed fam and I couldn't see the thing because she's changed it to Lemba Squad. That was her first order of business as administrator.
That's so beautiful.
Given the power.
Yeah, that'll teach you to not make her administrator. You know, how are you guys going to have everyone be administrator except her? That's ridiculous.
She wasn't of age at the time.
Fair. That's a fair point. That is a fair point.
But it's strange dynamics. They had a WhatsApp group called Lemba Girls.
Oh, so and you guess who wasn't? Yeah, that, you don't want to be a part of that one. Because you're definitely going to change the name as soon as you get it.
Lemba Squad did
you
2.
Did you see this... a video of Cardi B when she was listening to one of her Cardi B songs. Vulgar, you know, Vulgar, Cardi B joint. And her daughter was walking in from the background. And as soon as and she was on live, I think she was on Instagram live or something. Yeah. And as soon as she saw her daughter coming on Instagram, she immediately was like embarrassed. And she just shut everything down, switched off the music. And everyone was like, wait, you mean to tell me you don't even let your own daughter listen to your own music? And I thought that made perfect sense as a parent, right? Just because as a creator, you're creating over 18 content.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you want your child who's under 18 to consume your own content. What do you think
about? So what I find curious, and I want to get your take on it, because you're probably in a situation where within your movies, you might have to, you know, this program is rated 18, contains nudity and, you know. But it's interesting with the example you've just given, because if you think about it, at some point, the kid's going to be of age and... Does it then mean that as soon as that age is unlocked, you're comfortable with your child seeing it? Or do you question your own content creation process regarding how it's palatable to families? I don't know. It's a tough one.
What do you think, Kenny?
It's complicated. That's one thing I would say is, you know, I grew up listening to rap music and 90% of rap is vulgar, you know.
Yeah.
So I'll be listening to like a Hove song, and then you know, the hook is swear words, right?
Yeah.
But when I'm driving my daughter, I not play.
Down, yeah.
So the complication is you're a role model, so that's the only hero your kids know. And whatever picture you have of that is who they think is a role model. Mm. So I think it's why I say it's complicated is you don't want to pass that on. So you want them to always be a better version of who you are. You don't want your kids or your kid to grow up and be like you. You want them to be a better you, but they can't be a better you without you setting an example. So hence, the first question you asked in terms of what has changed is now you're able to not do certain things because that's not the narrative you want your kids to understand or view or understand of how the world is.
That makes perfect sense.
But again, I wouldn't speak for Cardi B because I don't really know her situation, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But for her, maybe it's, you know, it's content created for a certain market. Which shows because there's a lot of money being made. So maybe how she deals with stuff at home is different. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of subjectivity there where you do what you feel is, you know, it makes sense for your household, you know. And I don't know if there are too many professions out there that are 100% pure. Like I'm sure for most professions, there is a line that they skirt where it crosses the line of ethical sometimes, and sometimes it crosses the line of moral sometimes, and you don't always want your children to see you in that light as their first role model, like you said, Kenny. So sometimes you will protect your children from some of those things, you know. I mean, my dad was a magistrate, lawyer, and when he came home, he never spoke of his cases, because obviously there were a lot of those cases might have been, you know, they would have had an adverse effect on us as kids. I mean, obviously, so he wouldn't come home and say, in our murder trial today, you know, I had to rule the murderer not guilty and let him walk because letter of the law, you know. So obviously, I think Cardi is like all the rest of us, really, just skirting that line between doing what you know to be right and doing what you know to be good, and also trying to be as responsible as you can. you know.
And I think with that said, we also have to acknowledge that, you know, life is dynamic. I mean, if another family in the spotlight is Will Smith's family. Now, remember, Will Smith was Mr. No Cussing. He was Mr. Clean for most of his career. I mean, like, you'd be searching really hard to find one of his songs which has even the word shit, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you watch the stuff now that he's on Instagram and so on, you realize that it's a bit of a departure from who he is in real life. And now he's just kind of coming to terms with the fact that he is who he is. And mm-hmm. I suppose his kids are grown up enough to deal with it. I mean, similarly with my last example regarding my kids, there's sometimes when I'd be like, this movie is like really cool movie. They should check it out. And then there's a website called Common Sense Media, which I go to, you know, frequently because it's got the age rating and what you should look out for. Yeah, man. Commonsensemedia.org.
Okay.
So it gives you a warning of what scenes are in there, et cetera, you know. So a lot of those movies, about 2 years ago, like Ted or, you know, White Girls, which I thought these are hilarious. The kids will love them. Then you realize, no, there's that scene which has this and there's that scene which has that. And then now kids are like, hey, can we watch Ted? I'm using those examples because these are like 48 hours apart from this recording. And in my mind, I'm like, no, because I read the Common Sense Media review. But what I didn't realize is that I haven't refreshed my knowledge of those movies in line with what age they are at now.
Right.
You know what I mean? So they've grown.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean? And so that's the thing. You have to, at each point, I suppose, reevaluate
and recalibrate
exactly based on the fact that these kids are growing.
Remember that Eminem line? Will Smith don't got a curse to sell records, but I do. So F him and F you too. Eminem. Let's go back to Go Team. I want to touch on your other team member, your wife. Earlier on, outside of the podcast, earlier on, we're talking about how you've had to work with her sometimes because she's also a creative, right?
Yeah.
And so she's a director, right?
No, she's a producer. So the producer gets all the stress. What I mean by that is if we're doing a project, so she handles the logistics, she hires part of the team, most of the team, and then I'm responsible maybe picking who I'm working with as a cinematographer. But in terms of the functionality of that, say we're on the street and I want a horse to run down that street, she needs to make it happen, you know. That's what a producer would do. Right. So you understand the level of stress.
Of course.
Of course, she has to draw a line in terms of making sure that the project is successful. Mm-hmm. So as much as we are together, there's that line that's drawn. Mm. And it's tough to work with her because she does her job, I guess. that's the problem.
So do you decide based on the nature of the project when to involve her? Or do you involve her based on what's going on at home? You know, sometimes in the bedroom there, you're like, yo, I need to make it up to my wife.
Yeah.
Let me give her this next project as my way of saying sorry.
Probably if we went to her, she'd be like, I decide when I involve him.
Exactly.
Women always call the shots.
Yeah, she decides if she wants to get involved in a project. I actually pitched to her, say,
would you be involved in
this project?
That's lovely, yeah.
And then she would say yes or no. Or she would say, yes, the terms and conditions apply. This is how I work, not how you work. Yeah, so the advantage is because I've traveled Africa, I've been to close to 20 African countries. I've met different people and she's strong. She's one of the strongest I've met, actually, in terms of what she's able to do. Like, for example, South Africa only has mamaybe one or actually, I would say one or two producers that leave South Africa to go work in the other parts of Africa. Mm-hmm. Apart from that, she's the strongest.
That's crazy.
Yeah, in that space. Yeah.
You did say that you only work with her because she's that good.
I
wouldn't just work with her because she's my wife, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's actually brilliant. And you're able to separate when you're working and when you're not?
Yeah, so like when people meet us on set, they can tell.
Oh, yeah.
No. Yeah, they can't tell that we are together.
Yeah.
So it's always business.
You know, that's so interesting. I want to, you know, because what we're doing now is we're really trying to focus on growth and evolution. And I've known you now since Njota days. You know, Chilu obviously has known you longer, you know. And
not much longer, though. Like maybe...
Similar time.
Oh, yeah. Similar.
Yeah,
oh,
probably really? Like a year or two before Njota. Yeah.
It's just that you guys keep in touch better than I do.
You
are much better at keeping in touch than I am.
Yeah.
I suck at keeping in touch. It's terrible. Even my own parents, my mom is like, yo.
I have that problem.
When are you going to call me, man? You know? I wanted to ask you, because I can clearly see you're growing, you're evolving, you're changing. Because of lockdown, a lot of people bought cameras and setups at the house to do Zoom meetings, to do all this. And there's a lot of content creation happening now online. A lot of content creation. What do you think is, A, the best thing about that? And what do you worry about as the worst thing about that?
That's an interesting question. I mean, don't lie to you. Let's see.
Yeah, just be honest. Just be real.
See, what I realize with like content creation, right? As much as I would encourage people run, go do it, which is amazing. I think that's the only way you do it is even the professionals that you hear about, because I get to work with them and I'm close to them. And I see their weaknesses as creatives as well. That the difference sometimes between someone who's made it and someone who hasn't is the person who made it took the chance and they kept going and going and going. And then they learned through the process. I think creatives who have bought equipment, be as ambitious as possible, but be knowledgeable as you're ambitious. Know what your purpose is. So the downside is if you don't have purpose, you don't have knowledge of why you're doing what you're doing, your creation will only reach a certain threshold. And that's the thing about like back home is I started shooting back home, created music videos, created TV shows, created commercials. But then my country reached a threshold in terms of what I want to be, where I want to go with it. And that's why I had to break out and then travel to the different parts of the continent and then create from there. But even that also showed me that there's also a threshold. So I would say just keep pushing the limit. Try and educate yourself. I'm not saying you don't need a university to go to, but YouTube has everything, man.
Yeah,
like you are able to know what someone else is doing in real time now. So, you know who your competitor is globally immediately, as opposed to we have to wait for it. Mm-hmm. So, too much power sometimes people relax. I think you just always need to be on your toes. And that's what I think, just being online, seeing what everyone else is doing, and just also looking at reviews of, you know, what Hollywood Reporter is saying, what Deadline is saying. So I know who I'm competing with.
Yeah.
Yes. So that way it keeps me motivated. I think not having something is motivation enough.
I agree.
I've got one question, man, before you wrap, Zubs. And this one relates to how you refresh your mind creatively. And I see this a lot, for example, with stand-up comedians. You'll go to an event, you'll see this guy crack jokes, you'll be like, this guy is killer. Then you'll see him on another comedy special on TV, he's telling the same tried and tested jokes, which have got him to grab the audience. Whereas I think in your situation, you have to, with each production you do, I mean, I don't know how many commercials you shot last year. They have to be different. Mm-hmm. They have to kind of feel fresh and detached from the others. So how do you do that? How do you kind of you know, hit that refresh button creatively?
Yeah, okay. I don't lie, it's a struggle, because the thing is, like in my field is, if I'm given an opportunity to shoot a commercial, that company's probably shot commercials with 5-6 other directors before.
Right.
So I always need to make a difference of why am I different from everyone else that walk through this door. You have to remember me so that I'm able to get repeated business. So I always look at what the narrative is and find a way to push the envelope and find a different angle of telling the story. But because I watch content in Africa, I watch content that happens in Asia, Europe, and in America, I'm able to tell what's new, what's old, what's trending, what's not, what will hit you different and what won't. So I'm able to add those ingredients in and then push. So what's always how I refresh my mind and be able to achieve that is I'm mentally competitive with myself. So I spend time understanding who I am and how I fit into the bigger picture. So when you know you're a small little fish in the bigger world, you learn a different way of swimming so you can get to your destination quicker. Yeah.
Wonderful.
We are at a point where Africa's rich flavors are coming through and commanding their rightful space in art, music, visuals, dance, in storytelling, in all its facets, essentially. Interestingly, our evolution as Africans has been marked by having things taken away from us. Identity, wealth, ideas, and lives. The very essence of our stories was marked for destruction. But here we are now, sharing the very things that were designed to disappear, but have not. If that isn't evolution, then what is?